When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
You're invited to the Writing Excuses Cruise, an annual event for writers who want dedicated time to focus on honing their craft, connecting with their peers, and getting away from the grind of daily life. Join the full cast of Writing Excuses as we sail from Los Angeles aboard the Navigator of the Seas from September 19th through the 27th of 2024, with stops in Ensenada, Cabo San Lucas, and Mazatlan. The cruise offers seminars, exercises, and group sessions, an ideal blend of relaxation, learning, and writing, all while sailing the Mexican Riviera. For tickets and more information, visit writingexcuses.com/retreats.
Season 19, Episode 35. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on tension, an overview, and why ring shout.
15 minutes long because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Howard.
So this week, we are continuing our close reading series by looking at Ring Shout by P. Jelly Clark. We wanted to talk about this book in particular because as we're looking into this segment on tension and how do we talk about how you create, sort of build, and then release tension over the course of a story, we realized that shorter works can be really useful in examining how those techniques work and the best ways to go about doing that. So we wanted to pick a novella, and this is a very tense, very dark novella that we wanted to talk about in a little bit more detail.
And one of the things that I've particularly found compelling about it is that it uses tension in more than one way. We'll be talking about a bunch of these throughout the next couple of episodes, contextual versus in-text, anticipation and denial, and movement and resolution. But you're also seeing it in terms of the speed with which the tension is deployed and many of the tools that he's using from the character to the situation. It's got a lot of good examples for us mm-hmm. to use.
Exactly.
I also think it's just really cool as a sort of pair with our other novella from earlier in the year, because This Is How You Lose the Time War is about fantastical, imaginative landscapes. And this is a very grounded, very sort of feels like it's got a foot in the real world, but still fantastical story. And so I think it's really important to think about how do our tools work, both when we're creating something completely new and when we're drawing from something that we know maybe a lot better.
I loved reading this so much that I read it all in one afternoon. And maybe that's because the tools were just used so well to keep me tense that I couldn't put it down until I was done with it.
I am going to say, for those of you who are a little bit jumpy, I was listening to this in audiobook and I had to stop because I needed to be able to skim over the parts that were too much for me. I can't do horror. And while this book is not actually horror, it's a straight up monster book. You know, it's monster hunting and it's basically an adventure novel. There are parts of it that are using tools from horror to create tension. And I couldn't listen to it in audiobook. It was really good. And I was like, I have to stop. This is not okay.
And, you know, as the cover might indicate, it is also dealing with a lot of real world trauma and tension. You know, a lot of this is pulled from actual history or, you know, begins in actual historical events and then adds the fantasy layer on top of it. So, you know, just a heads up to all of our audience that we're going to be getting into some pretty heavy topical topics of conversation here.
Be ready for it. or as ready as you can be, you know? Yeah. So, but it is good to know, especially if you're just starting to read the book now, so that you're not, you know, so that you have some preparation for what is to come. Who can really prepare for tension in truth?
No. And that's actually one of the things, and we'll talk about this deeper into the episodes, but one of the things that I particularly appreciated and why it was so hard is that I would see the tension and I would brace myself for one kind of problem, and then it would be something else that was I was not prepared for.
The bait and switch is such a useful technique. One place I'd love to start, actually, as we're diving into this conversation, is actually to not start with the writing itself, but to start from a publishing angle, because, you know, I just touched on it briefly, but I think the cover of this book is absolutely brilliant and does such a fantastic job of signaling the kind of story that we're going to be engaging in and already increasing the tension there. And it really hits on the thing that you were just saying there, Robinette, of you have this figure of, you know, the white hood, which is very iconic and symbolic and menacing. But then when you look closer, Aaron, you and I were talking about this right before we started, you can see the teeth eyes, the teeth in the eye holes, which again, I think is for you of like expecting one thing and then realizing, oh, there's another layer here that's upsetting and difficult.
Okay. I didn't even look at the cover. I was, admission, I read this on assignment. You know, I had not picked it up before I knew we were going to record it. But then I picked it up and immediately just opened it up and started reading, sat down and started reading. The first time I stopped and set it down and looked at the cover, I looked at it and went, ah! because now I knew what might be there. And oh boy, it was fun. And it's very stylized. It's not like you're looking at something graphic. It's just, that's just cool.
Yeah. I have to admit that I was reading it in the airport and I had the thought of, this book does not look like the book that I'm reading to someone who does not know what this book is.
Yeah.
And that creates another additional tension that I think is very intentional tension.
Yeah. It's a book designed to make you uncomfortable in a number of ways. And, you know, some of that is the contextual elements in terms of the packaging and the design and how it was published. And some of that is the content itself.
Yeah. I just keep thinking about the teeth eyes. Sorry.
The teeth eyes, I have a, yeah.
But I love that. I always think this is a slight tangent, but I think there's something about putting things together that just don't feel like they could ever belong together that creates like a visceral lizard brain tension. Because I think like we can have tension like in the front of our brains where it's like, this is an intellectual tension. Mm-hmm. Like, why is it like this? But then there's like the part of you that's like, no, eye holes with teeth, bad. Like the part of you that would have been afraid of like a wolf back in the day is activated. And I love when stories are working both on that primal tension level and the intellectual and emotional tension level. And I think this one does all three, which is so cool.
For me, one of the big things for me is like a kind of discordance, right? So if I'm watching supernatural horror, I could ride with lots of gore, lots of violence, doesn't throw me at all. But you put me in a real world context, like a home invasion story, or you know, somebody using something that's not meant to be a weapon as a weapon, I'm deeply unsettled and very uncomfortable and often have to bail. There's a memorable scene in a movie called Titan involving a knitting needle. If anybody's seen it, I was like, I'm done. I got to bail on this movie. I very rarely bail on movies. But sometimes that discordance, being able to lean into a kind of tension where you're making people uncomfortable by creating things that shouldn't go together, can be so powerful and disruptive.
It is one of the best tools that to use when you're writing anything that's set, like any sort of historical fantasy, because there is the tension of what the audience knows about the history that is in conversation with the tension of the story that is also in conversation with the tension of the way you have changed the world. And those three things can cause the story to become wildly unpredictable to the audience and for them to also bring their own, like the places where they're putting their own pressure on the story from the outside, which this does great things with.
I sometimes think of tension in terms of potential energy, you know, the rock at the top of the hill. I know that there isn't much keeping this from rolling, you know, from heading down the hill. and I think I know which way it's going to roll. It doesn't have to be frightening. It doesn't even necessarily have to be uncomfortable. It just has to be this awareness that this state of things cannot hold.
Mm-hmm.
Something mm-hmm. is going to move, and I don't know what's going to move, but it has to move because this can't keep up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's every other page for me on the way through Ring Shout.
Yeah.
Love it.
Well, and this is something you talk about a lot, Howard, is that tension can be multiple things, right? We're talking about tension in a horror context or like a suspense context because of this particular book. But tension also can be released through a joke, right? You can use a comedic drop instead of, you know, the jump scare or you know, the reveal of something awful. And that's still tension building the same way. You know, I think about the movie director Jordan Peele being such a brilliant horror filmmaker because he's a brilliant comedian too, mm-hmm. right? And so many of the skills mm-hmm. that go into one can go into the other. There's a moment in the Candyman reboot that they did a few years ago where a woman opens the door down to basement stairs and it's like these long stairs descending to darkness. And it's like this incredibly tense moment. It just feels awful. And then she just goes, nope. And closes the door. And the theater I was in just bust out laughing completely. And it was like a perfect use of tension and release in that moment. Although, even though in a horror movie, not for a horrific purpose, in a way that as we're talking about this, I want you to think about all the different ways in which tension can be deployed as a narrative tool, even though because of this, we're going to be focused on the darker side of it.
Yeah. And I think we often like braid the different types of tension and just, like you're saying, call them all tension. But thinking back to kind of the like physical, emotional, and intellectual tension, I was thinking about it again when you were talking about the rock at the top of the hill, because I'm thinking if you're watching a snowball go down a mountain, you're at the bottom. Like intellectually, you know, it will gather speed and eventually crush you. Eventually, it will become close enough that you will really know that it's about to crush you. And also, I don't know, your mom's standing there. So you have to save her from the avalanche that is about to come upon you. But different people will react in different ways. Like some people can see the most horrific physical, like a slasher movie forever.
Yeah.
And it will have no impact. They will not feel any tension. They're like, I don't care about physical danger, but emotional danger gets me.
Yeah.
Like somebody being embarrassed to me is harder to watch than somebody, you know, being hacked into bits.
Absolutely.
And so if you're thinking about all the time, where are you deploying each of those types of tension, then you'll get the widest audience possible feeling tense.
Yeah. Speaking of keeping balls rolling and moving things along, we're going to take a break for a moment and we will be right back.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Late last fall, Netflix released a new animated show called Blue-Eyed Samurai. I was initially skeptical, but was completely won over by the stunning animation style and impeccable action choreography. Frankly, I expected a simplistic good time, kind of like a John Wick thing, but was surprised by how thoughtful the show is about race and empire and violence. It's one of those hyper-kinetic action shows, but one that knows when to slow down and ask questions about its hero and the world she inhabits.
Mel Brooks famously said that comedy is you falling into a manhole and dying. Tragedy is me with a hangnail. when I think of tension in terms of this, you see someone walking and you see an open manhole and there is tension, but you don't yet know if the resolution is going to be comedy or tragedy because you don't know what's in that hole.
Mm-hmm.
And And that's part of that unexpected aspect of it. I mean, there's the tension of the potential energy of something is going to fall, but there's the unexpected, the darkness of that manhole. It might have a very silly octopus in it. Mm-hmm. It might have a very ferocious octopus in it. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I talk a lot about pattern recognition when it comes to fiction, mm-hmm. right? And I think tension is a thing that is very consciously playing on pattern recognition. It taps into something I think of as narrative inevitability. Once you start setting up a certain pattern, people will expect that to conclude in a certain way. They'll expect a resolution of that, right? And the example I was talking about earlier of, you know, heroine opens the door to a dark basement. You're like, oh, she's going to go down there. Something bad's going to happen. You expect that resolution. That's where the tension, that's where the dread, that's where the energy in that scene is coming from. And, you know, as you're talking about, Howard, it was released in comedy instead of in horror by her closing the door in a very funny way. But it was the refusal to resolve that tension as opposed to giving into it, I think, is a thing to think about as you're building it. So how do you actively use the patterns of storytelling to manipulate your audience's emotional state?
And that's a great point. It's something that we talked about in a previous episode, previous season, when we did a dive into tension. We talked about anticipation and the patterns that the listener the reader recognizes. As we were talking about Ring Shout, one of the things that I want to point out is that you'll hear us using different terms than we used previously, and that's because the terms of art for tension, there are so many different ways to apply it that all of the things that we're talking about are basically us attempting to apply a lens or some sort of words to, this makes me feel some feels.
Yeah. Yeah, tension's about emotion is the main thing to think about here.
I'm feeling some kind of way, one of my favorite expressions. I also think it just occurred to me that, like, thinking about the manhole, there was a recent question put out in the writing world of whether or not twists make sense. Mm-hmm. Because the theory is, if the twist is actually completely unexpected, it actually feels like a trick. Like, if you could not anticipate it at all, it feels mm-hmm. like the author being clever at your expense. Mm-hmm. But I think one way you can actually get around that, if you want to have the truly surprising twist, is by making the emotions carry through even if the facts don't. So if you're walking down the street and there's a manhole cover, the like open hole in front of you, but you step on it, it turns out it's an optical illusion. It was just a sidewalk artist doing it. And so the audience is like, aha, you fooled me. And then the person takes another step and is hit by a truck.
Yep.
The hitting by a truck makes no sense, maybe, but you were still in that moment of tension right at the moment that something happened. And so it feels more earned, even though the truck came out of nowhere.
Yeah. The example I always think of is the Red Wedding from Game of Thrones, right? It's like this moment that is such a famously twist moment of like, oh my God, nobody anticipated that. But it made so much logical sense and emotional sense for the characters we're at that you could see how it was inevitable in retrospect, right? So tension can also be, you know, I'm talking about the narrative patterns and you know something is going to happen, but it's fun to hold that back of understanding what exactly the event will be that will release the tension, right? So it's another way to think about that.
One of the things that I want to point out before we wrap up is that as part of these close reading series, we want you to read the book before you listen to the episodes. And when you are doing this, read the book, do a close reading of the book. Think about why the book is making you tense. Think about the choice of language, the choice of point of view, what decisions are being made. By all means, enjoy the book, but read it closely and try to learn from it. That's, you know, at the beginning of the episode, why did we pick Ring Shout? Because we can learn from it. We can learn a lot from it.
That dovetails very beautifully with my homework, which is I basically want you to do what Howard described to a book that you love or a movie that you love. Take a suspenseful story that you've really enjoyed, that you feel the kind of feelings we're talking about, either anticipation or dread or, you know, that kind of emotional tension. And what I want you to do is write an outline for that work. Create that outline. Note where that tension was coming in for you and how it was resolved, right? And then from that, you'll have a little bit of a map and a little bit of a key to begin to understand some of the stuff we're going to talk about in the coming episodes.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.